Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
I debated big questions at Vox Conversations.
And we're asking big questions about yesterday's presidential debate.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We appreciate your iTunes reviews so much and hope that if you haven't written one, you will go do that. Sarah, I don't know if you've seen the newest one, but someone thinks that I'm her spirit animal, and that makes me pretty happy. That's like a bucket list item checked off for me.
That's how I felt about the review that called us the Oprahs of nuance. I've been for 35 years to be called the Oprah of something. Because I really don't talk about it a lot on the show because mainly the show Oprah show is not a lot around anymore. So I don't have as many reference points. But I am the largest, most passionate, most enthusiastic Oprah fan in the world.
So
I'm
you
not
might...
being hyperbolic.
You might think that you're just writing an iTunes review, but you are, in fact, helping other people find us and making our dreams come true.
Exactly.
So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, you're going to tell us all about your amazing week in Washington, D.C., in the Pearls today.
Yes, in the Pearls, because there's a couple things going on. We thought I'll talk about the Vox conversations. I hope you guys enjoyed the little snippet of an actual conversation I had with Josh and Andy about asking big questions, ask big questions as an organization, and the universal basic income, which was a big topic of conversation while I was there. So the first day they had sort of what they called explainers. So they had sort of presentations in the traditional sense from a woman with a health startup called Health Leads that really tries to meet the social needs of patients. So the idea of like, well, let's not just treat somebody's diabetes. Let's figure out why they're not taking care of their own diabetes. They had DJ Patel, who is the White House data scientist. I got to eat dinner with him. It was phenomenal. They had Natalie Foster, who's sort of an expert on the gig economy and a big proponent of universal basic income, along with Andy Stern, who was on our podcast on Friday as well. And then they would have town halls where we'd sort of talk. We had a town hall after that set of speakers where we would all stand up sort of and share whatever we wanted to share. And then they had Senator Wyden talking about Rule 41 and the Criminal Procedure Code. And then Jennifer Lawless, which had a, she had a great presentation about the lack of young participation, young people participation in politics. And then Matt Iglesias, who is on a lot of the fans. I know we have a lot of fans of the Weeds as our listeners. And so he's on the Weeds. And he basically did a very upbeat presentation on how our presidential system should crack and crumble to the ground within the next, you know, couple decades so that we can't sustain it. And then Tom Khalil, the science and technology, chief of science and technology at the White House. And then we had another town hall. And so it was just, it was amazing people just kind of throwing out how our economy is changing, is our government up for the task, and then everybody sort of chiming in. I introduced everyone there till Paducah. By the end, Paducah was basically a shortcut to say small town. I really thought I might have somebody moving back to me by the time it was over, but alas, I came back by myself. And then the next day, it was where we can make our own sort of presentations or panels, I guess is what you call it. Not panels because it was more than one person, but basically if you're like, okay, I want to talk about universal basic income, you wrote it down on this big post note and then they kind of arranged them and you could go to different rooms and talk about that kind of stuff. And so I went to one on criminal justice reform and the rural small town rural divide and sort of the degrading of our language online and trolling and how to deal with trolling. So I mean, the panels were all over the place and it was really fascinating. My big aha, well, the big summary, I think, Ezra Klein, who, P.S., we're now totally best friends, said is that, you know, what he realized is that our problems have outpaced our system's solutions to deal with them. So the problems in education, the problems in healthcare, the problems in government, the problems in our economy, like, and I've said this previously, like, we have 20th century systems and 21st century problems. Like, that's a problem. That's a problem in and of itself. But my big aha that I had, Beth, was that we were talking about criminal justice reform. And this woman said, you know, we closed down our mental institutions in the 70s and we put everybody in prison. And so now that we're talking about criminal justice reform, we're going to close down our prisons and they're still not going to have anywhere to go. And I was sort of talking with somebody after the panel about how much I enjoyed that comment. Not enjoyed, but, you know, connected with it. And this person said, well, yeah, we don't have mental health care because we don't treat people like they treat like somebody if they get cancer, which is a point I've totally made in the past. But what I immediately thought of is, have you ever heard of these statistics about women who get cancer and divorce?
No.
So if you're a woman and you get cancer, it's like your divorce rates skyrocket. Like, wow. They're really high because it's not likely that your husband wants to take care of you, which is a really uplifting thought. But, and I was telling them this and I said, you know, that the more I think about it, the more it's not, you know, maybe all of this is about care. We have a problem with caregiving in this country and the fact that we don't value it. And we've talked about before that that's behind the gender wage gap, that we don't have good mental health care. I think that's about that. That we have this economy in which robots are replacing everything, but there's a huge sector right there that robots can't replace, and technology. And just, you know, in our independence-driven culture, I don't think we teach people, like, there will be a time in your life in which you will need to be a caregiver, either for a child or a parent or a relative, and there's no shame in that, and that is a valuable contribution to our society, and let's figure out ways we can support those people. And it's just, like, after I sort of had this aha moment about caregiving, it just felt like it was bubbling up in everything we were talking about for me. Like, oh, well, that's actually about caregiving. Oh, well, that's really about caregiving. And that's about how we don't value caregiving. And so it really became sort of a central theme for me as far as the connection between the different things we were talking about. But, you know, overall, it was a really incredible 2 days. I learned a lot. It was amazing.
What did you walk away from it thinking, here's something that should be done?
Oh, here's something that should be done. I mean, I was pretty already, I wasn't really on the fence, but universal basic income, after we had several presentations about the changing economy, like Andy Stern talked about, we have 3.6 million truck drivers. Well, we're not that far away from self-driving trucks. We're just not. We're close. And the second that happens, I mean, that's just one tiny, you know, that's not tiny. 3.6 million jobs isn't tiny, but, you know, that's just another illustration of our economy is changing and we really need to think about what we're going to do. And, you know, again, I really like the way he put it, that it's like the safety net for them. It's a safety net for everybody that the middle class and upper classes have, like that you can explore or change or, you know, move or start a business and you have this little safety net. And that's sort of what the universal basic income allows for people. So, I mean, I would love to do that right now. That would be great.
What did you, when you talk about how our systems haven't kept up with our problems, what kind of conclusions did you reach about how to change those systems?
Well, I think the electoral system was something we talked about a lot. Like we talked about, do we have too much democracy? Do we have too many elected officials? Maybe we do. Do we have, you know, how do we deal with the outpacing of, you know, our elected officials to people's interest in politics? One thing I thought a lot about with regards to that, like Jennifer Lawless in their research, they talk about we need to get to people at college, we need to get to people at high school. And maybe just because I have small children, there's a part of me that's like, that's too late. Like, we need to teach people to talk to their kids about politics in elementary school. Like, it's not a scary subject. And my point was, I think women play more of a role in this than we think. Like, in my household, it's women, it's my mother and my grandmothers that, like, shut down the political conversations. Like, we're not going to fight y'all, don't talk about that. You know, and so I think that would be interesting. But there was a lot of specific electoral reforms with regards to how we vote that I think would help with regards to the outdatedness of our political system. Although, again, Matt Iglesias and his democratic apocalypse is coming was, I'm not even sure if that would help, but it was interesting.
How did you find it in terms of partisanship?
There were a couple Republicans there. I mean, it was largely a progressive Democratic crowd. There was a young Republican who was from a public policy fellowship, but he like couldn't tell us who he worked for, which was kind of interesting. I sat next to him at dinner too. So there were a couple, but no, it was mostly Democrats and progressives.
Was there discussion about the party system and where the party system's going and the adequacy?
You know, there wasn't.
Then
we spent a lot of time talking about a lot of time talking about sort of the polarization within our current party system, and we spent a lot of time talking about voting because, like, the Michelle from Fair Vote was there, who I think we're going to try to have on the show. And so we spent a lot of time talking about like how other localities or local governments voted, but we didn't really actually talk that much about the party system itself.
Interesting.
There wasn't even that much talk about Donald Trump, honestly.
Were you able to share Pantsuit Politics with lots of people? Let's get to the most important question here.
Of course. And we had a listener who was already there. How about that?
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. So I did. I passed out a lot of cards. People were really interested. I had talked to a lot of really amazing people, including Sarah McBride from the Human Rights Commission, who spoke at the DNC, and she's going to come on our show, which is really exciting. So yeah, spread the word far and wide.
That's great.
Of Pantsuit Politics in Paducah, for sure.
Should we compliment the other side before we move on to our reflections on the debate?
Yes.
Well, I'll start, since you've been talking for a while, give you a chance to catch your breath and say that I would like to extend my compliments to President Obama this week. I think he did the right thing and that the right thing was hard to do in vetoing the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. If you haven't been following this, it is a bill that was passed by both houses of Congress. That would allow victims of 9/11, the families of victims of 9/11, to sue Saudi Arabia for civil damages. And a number of victims' advocacy groups put a lot of pressure on Congress to pass this legislation. And Congress is threatening to override this veto, and most people are predicting that they will do that. I think President Obama is just right about this, that it is, while you feel your heart wanting to allow anything that would help any family member of a victim of 9/11, we can't have sovereign nations being sued in our court system. Mm-hmm. And the problems particular to Saudi Arabia, it's just a dangerous precedent, I think. And I appreciated how very difficult it must have been for him to veto this legislation. And I commend him for doing it.
So I wanted to compliment Representative Mike Kaufman. One of our regular and lovely listeners, Katie, sent me an email about him. Really interesting. He has come out against Donald Trump. He's done a lot of really Invisibilia? Script flipping. That's what I feel like he's an expert at. Just what was expected of him, and he just sort of constantly is bucking stereotypes and flipping the scripts. And it was a really, we'll link to the article she sent in the show notes so everybody can check it out. So kudos, Mike Kaufman. So we are here mere moments after the debate has ended, recording our thoughts for our lovely Paint Soup Politics community.
We are indeed, and you'll forgive me if I sound a little Trumpian in my sniffling as we go forward. I think I'm getting a cold, and it is also almost 11 o'clock my time, and I typically turn into a pumpkin much earlier than this.
But that's like on theme. He was sniffling. Everybody on Twitter is talking constantly about his sniffles, and I did not notice. Is that bad?
I noticed, but only because it was a rare moment of me feeling some camaraderie with him. So, no, I thought it was funny how, I mean, there were some funny jokes about like, oh my God, is he dying? Because, you know, the health thing. So what did you think, Sarah? I know you were stressed.
Oh, I'm still stressed. I'm like really, really stressed. I just, this is how I feel. I just feel like my new favorite word, and I feel like this happened in the debate, is false equivalency. He is not qualified to be president. He is not prepared to do the job. My favorite moment is when she said, yeah, I did prepare for this debate, just like I prepared to be president. Like, I did think she got a lot of, like, sort of zingers in, and Twitter seems to think he lost the debate, but I really wanted him to, like, call her a bitch or something, truthfully.
Sarah goes full transparency for this edition of Answer Politics.
Totally.
I don't know how to respond to that. I'm glad he didn't call her a bitch, I guess, just for America. I'm glad that didn't happen in our presidential debate.
Oh, I don't know. I just feel like the best thing for America is his bullshit to be laid bare, man. I just feel like all this us sort of tiptoeing around it and pretending like there's something to be gained from anything he says is just bleh.
I think it was laid bare in the foreign policy section, though. Because there's no way that you watch what happened in the foreign policy section specifically and thought, I mean, yeah, he could do this. No, I mean, he really, I thought he was very much in his sweet spot on the trade portion, right? The economic part, I thought Kellyanne probably had to feel good about the performance, the temperament, the way he was going at it. It's not everyone's cup of tea. I understand that sounds like crazy talk to our kind of diehard Hillary people. But I thought that it was good out of the gate. It was Trump good. Let me just step back for a second and say that my overall thought was there was not a Republican on the debate stage tonight, mm-hmm. right? Like, there was absolutely no conservative ideology represented at all. That said, so not at all advocating for Trump. But it was a weird experience to watch this and not really be invested in anything other than I hope that our country doesn't just implode in the midst of all this. But when you got to the foreign policy part and he rambled and he, like, I feel like you could almost see in his face that he knew he didn't know what he was talking about.
Mm. Yeah.
We are special breakfast people here at Pantsuit Politics, but not just when Beth and I are on the road. The truth is, I want something warm from the oven every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. It's just the truth. It makes it feel special, makes it feel exciting. I don't want to work at it. So the first time I ever saw Wild Grain, which is Bake from Frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries, I was obsessed. You guys, I've been a member for over a year. It's amazing. It's so easy. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. You can fully customize your Wild Grain box. You can choose any combination of breads, pastas, pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit to start your subscription. Sometimes I make one single croissant just for me because I want to feel special, and they're so good. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit. That's wildgrain.com/pantsuit, or you can use promo code pantsuit at checkout. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Can I get something off my chest? Every day I feel a little pang of sadness because I think about Griffin going away to college. Y'all, he's a freshman in high school. This is not healthy or normal. This is why I have it on my list of things to talk to my therapist about. We all carry around these things, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us. Therapy is a safe space to get these things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. You gotta get it off your chest. And you can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pantsuit.
I mean, I'm just saying this from, I tried to watch this really objectively because I obviously don't want him to be the president.
So I have a question, but like, how can you be objective? He cannot win. Oh my God. I'm so scared.
I totally agree that he cannot win, and I don't think he will.
Okay. Okay. We have switched positions. This is Larry's. In the primary, I was like, P.S., a little backstage pints of politics. In the primary, I was like, dude, he's not going to win the primary. And you're like, oh, my God, I think he's going to win the primary. And you were right then, so that makes me feel better now that I'm like, oh, my God, what if he's president? And you're like, it's totally okay. He's not going to be president. I keep telling myself that. Okay. He's not.
I mean, I think that it's going to feel close in large part because that's a good story. I think it'll be very, very interesting to watch what gets covered tomorrow because I think there's a big interest of the national media in keeping this close. But I think at the end of the day, the demographics favor a Democrat in all circumstances. And I just don't think there are enough angry white people, even if he were getting all of the angry white person vote, for him to win this election based on our electoral college system. I just don't think that that can happen. I think it's going to feel stressful and close, but I don't think he's going to win. So, like, not wanting him to win is different than being excited about her, right? And it's just, I keep waiting to be excited about her. Like, I want there to be a moment when I'm like, okay, I get it. And I'm just not having that moment. I thought she was good tonight. And
I did too.
I thought she was on point. I thought she demonstrated her command of the issues.
There's some things she did well on, like, that'll play well on cable news. Like, the prepared line. like her.
But sort you know of what? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I like her better in the moments when she's not doing the prepared lines, the zinger lines. Like, I like my favorite part of her tonight was when she could have gone to those zingers after his kind of rambling tirade. And instead she said, no, I want to talk about NATO. That felt so authentic to her, to me, that I liked her best in that moment when she wasn't going for the cable news.
You know what I think, though, I've been thinking a lot about is I read that piece about the interview that changed everything when she did say those lines. And I don't think the Tammy Wynette line and the I could have stayed home and baked cookies. I think that is her. And she dials it back because she thinks that got her in trouble so much in the 90s with Clinton. But I do think that's her. I do think she does want to be like, you know what? Suck it. So it does feel authentic to me because the more I think about her and think about her particularly in relationship to those two pivotal moments in his campaign, I don't know. I think that is her. I don't think, you know, I think she does have a sense of humor and I think she would like to get in more zingers, but she's just so afraid of coming off as something that she's not. I don't know. But I do think no matter how we feel about them, they're important because that's what cable news, you know, they need something that they can clip and, you know, have those little lines where the audience was blatantly disobeying the rules.
I hated that the audience disobeyed the rules. I have no nuance for audiences who can't be quiet.
Weird rules, man.
I would rather them not have an audience present and let these people debate. I hate the cheering like it's a football game. It's not a football game.
You know? I was so interested, though, when you were like, I really feel like they're debating, whereas I just felt like he was just yelling over her. I don't feel like they were really debating anything substantive because I don't think he's capable of that.
What I thought was great about it at the very beginning when they were just kind of free-forming, I thought it was nice to watch how she handled him. You know, it didn't serve him to be able to do that. And I thought that it did sort of serve her to let us see her listen for a while, then step up and push back. Like, I actually thought that it inured to her benefit for the most part. And, you know, I'm watching people who I know to be pro-Hillary people, like, freaking out that Lester Holt wasn't interrupting. Like, I actually thought that that benefited her in a lot of ways because it showed that what he does is filibuster.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I was stressed by Lester Holt. I felt like Lester Holt could have been a little more. First of all, the timing was just like 20 seconds, my ass. Everybody was talking for like 5 minutes. It felt like maybe it wasn't that long. But I did feel like there were times where he should have said, but it's like, what do you say to somebody when you say, that's a lie, that's not what happened? And then they just go, yes, it is. I mean, I don't even know how you are, and she, you know, she came up against that too. I just don't know what you do when you say the sky is blue. No, it's not, it's green. That's a lie.
I think you just let it play out. Ugh. I mean, there isn't going to be someone coming down from heaven to say, like, you know, to do like a Saved by the Bell Zach Morris, like, time out, that's incorrect. You know, that's not going to happen in this setting. And I think she's really good when she doesn't say, hey, fact checkers, get busy on this, and try to do that kind of cute thing. I don't like that. I liked it when she just said, no, that's not what the record demonstrates. No, that's not what you said, and moved on. Like, because when she moves on, it's even more dismissive of it in a credible way to me, right? When she just moves on, what I hear is, that's wrong, and I'm not even worried about it because it's so ridiculous in its wrongness.
Oh, I hope so. I just feel like he puts stuff out there, and I don't really know. Like I said, I don't know what you do. I don't know how. I wish there was a Zach Morris, somebody from on high, who could just be like, stop. Just stop. We all know it's not true, but it doesn't really matter. Somebody's going to believe it's true. So you didn't think he seemed presidential at all, or did you think he got a little bit of that across?
I thought he kept himself under control better than anyone would have expected. I thought that I don't think he was presidential. Like, I don't know who looks at him and thinks, yeah, super presidential. I don't know. I think at the beginning of the debate, you saw a Donald Trump that the Republican Party would have liked to have seen months ago. Like, if he were a candidate who had a demonstrated ability to learn and improve over time. And he had started with some of that, like the guy who was there for the trade talk. I think that he could have been a much more formidable opponent. Still someone who doesn't represent my ideology at all, but a better opponent than he is today. But that just devolved, right? Like he couldn't maintain it because he's not done the work to be strong enough on the substance.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I just think he has not put in the time that you have to put in. I mean, think about how much time you and I put in to be able to do our mock debate. Oof. I don't think Donald Trump has spent that much time on substance the whole time he's been running for president. I just don't.
Well, and I read the best thing that was like, this is what it's like to be president. You read briefing books, you do all the research, and you prepare. You don't just fly off the cuff. That's what's so terrifying to me about the thought of this man being president. It's like, I don't know, that doesn't sound right. Or let's, so many things he said tonight, like, I don't, it's smart not to pay taxes. Okay. Or where he implied basically that people should pay us to defend them are people that we're in treaties with. I just don't. It's so stressful. It's like my, you know, I can really put on my nuanced hat and I can have these moments where I'm listening to, Ezra Klein interview the woman who wrote Strangers in Your Own Country. And I'm like so thoughtful about, yeah, people's stories. And everybody has their own understanding of the world, and everything is so nuanced. And then in this moment, in this debate tonight, I'm just like, baby Jesus, come down and wave a wand so that everyone can understand how bananas this all is. Like, I've been stressed about it all day long. I was just so hyped up by the time it started. There was no way I was going to maintain any sort of objectivity or nuance.
That's a question that I have. Is it a gift to her that he's this kind of candidate? Or do you think that she is saddened that this is the debate she's participating in? Does she want a worthy opponent?
Oh, yes. Yes, for sure. Yeah. I think she would much rather be up there, the woman who does all the research and is ready to, you know, talk about her platforms and her policies. No, I think she would much rather have a worthy opponent.
I thought that one of the, we didn't hear much commentary because we basically turned the debate off and came upstairs. But before I did that, I heard Brian Williams say, you'd be forgiven if you felt like you were watching two separate conversations going on. And I think that that's like a really good summary of America right now. You know, there are two different conversations going on. And in that respect, I'm not sure this debate could move anybody. Because I think the Trump people heard what the Trump people want to hear and the Clinton people heard what the Clinton people want to hear. A great example of that is how excited many of our listeners were about her response to the implicit bias question. That is exactly the kind of off-putting response that makes the Trump people the Trump people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what draws people into her. I'm not saying that I find it off-putting. I'm saying it's off-putting to that population. So it is two separate discussions. And I think that's why in a lot of ways the coverage will matter. But in more ways, the map matters. Because I just don't know how many people out there can be moved at this point.
I mean, there's supposedly still a lot of undecided voters. That's what's so insane.
Yeah, and I mean, I think those voters are primarily college students, if today's press coverage is any indication, where you've got college students kind of saying, I don't know if I can trust her. I don't like him. I mean, they're going to come around to her or they're not going to vote, I think. And then I think you have people like me who just wish to God that this we'd wake up from this nightmare and have an option that we felt comfortable with. But, you know, if the election were held today, of course I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton because it's close. And what else am I going to do? I'm a responsible human being who wants someone who can lead our country in the Oval Office. I'm not excited about it. I don't like it. I'll spend the next 4 years thinking, oh, when is this going to be over? But I'll do it. And I think that a lot of Republicans are in that camp.
God, I mean, I hope so. I'm going to be excited about it. I think maybe you won't spend every moment of 4 years. Maybe she'll surprise you. Maybe you'll have a moment where you're like, you know what? Sister did a good job on that. But
I think so, because I try to be a nuanced person. I mean, I do that with President Obama, right? I have moments of kudos for President Obama.
I mean, it's but just like, why are we on a... this is the moment in this debate. Like, I just spent 2 days last week at Vox talking about the big, huge problems that plague our country, from globalization and its effect on our economy, from tech and the fact that we are losing human connection with each other, to our education system and how we prepare people and our children for the 21st century, foreign policy, aviation, you know, down to the language we use on the internet. Huge, big things. And they spent a portion of this debate talking about whether Barack Obama was born in the United States. Are you freaking kidding me? And it's all because of him. And it just makes me so angry. Like, there are important things to be talked about. And it's not her, and it's not Hillary Clinton. This is not the lesser of two evils. Oh my God, this debate, this campaign is so wretched, blah, blah, blah. She's not the reason we're out there talking about whether Barack Obama was born in the United States. We have much bigger problems. You know what I mean? She's not the reason we're talking about whether or not women are fat pigs and whether you should comment on their appearance, or whether or not, like, it's just so frustrating to me. And I'm sure she feels that too. That's why I said I didn't hesitate to say that. It's like, come on. I mean, how many minutes of this debate do we spend talking about the birther movement? Ugh.
Well, I completely agree with that. And I don't think any moment of this entire campaign from any of the 300 million people who started running for president has been about the future. You don't have any candidates talking about the future. When Lester Holt brought up cybersecurity, I thought, I don't know that anybody ran for president this year who's equipped to deal with that issue. I really don't. I think Hillary Clinton will work her butt off to do her best with that issue. But we've got a whole different landscape. I mean, I tweeted the economic policy portion of this could have been lifted from the late 80s, early 90s on both sides. There's nothing forward thinking going on here. Did you vote for the Iraq war or not? You know, and they both do it. The birther issue. It's all about who did what in the past. And I get that her angle is experience, and that's a valid angle. She has impressive experience. I have no fight with that. But there isn't anything forward thinking from either of them. And I think that's part of
why. I disagree
why
with that, though.
It's
she
difficult
really
for her to capture the Barack Obama enthusiasm, because I wasn't an Obama fan, but it was very futuristic.
I disagree, though. I think that when she first started and she said, look, our economy has changed and people got left behind. So how do we deal with that? And she talked about something we talk about forward thinking that we talked about at Vox and you and I talk about on this podcast, which is the nature of work and the balance between family and work. She started her opening statement with that. And she said, look, okay, so we need to forward think about the way family and work, paid family leave, maternity leave. I felt like all that was very like, let's talk about things that matter and things that affect people and things we've neglected for too long and move into the future on the balance between work and family. I thought that was really great, and I thought that was really forward thinking. And if we're always being, you know, it's every time she would say something, she'd be like, okay, let's talk about this is my plan. What's your plan? Well, you're terrible, and you've been fighting ISIS your whole life. I just felt like every time she'd say something, his response was, well, you've been around forever, and everything's still bad. Like, really? Really?
Well, that's his most effective line of attack against her. That's what the polls are going to tell, the crosstabs are going to tell his team that he needs to do, right? Paint her as the status quo. And that's not wrong. I mean, it's not wrong. So it's not the substantive exchange of ideas about the future that we'd like to have, but I understand it tactically. And, you know, 2 minutes after she did the dive into work-family balance, which I agree was a good moment for her and a consistent one. I think one of her best ads up right now is the one that shows her over a 30-year period talking about children, even though it doesn't say a lot substantively. I think it's a really effective ad for her. But, you know, a couple minutes after that, somehow he's got her defending NAFTA, which, I mean, it's just... It's like we can't get out of the 90s in a lot of ways because of who these two people are and their views of the world. And I'm not trying to do false equivalency. And I have to say about that phrase that it is my least favorite phrase. I would put it on my ban list right now. Because while it's totally fair, I think it's used a lot to say that any criticism of her is is illegitimate because he's so awful. You know what I mean? And that's not, like, worthy of our process either.
I don't know. I think at this point it is. I think at this point I'm just so frustrated with the fact that this is, like, tied. Yeah, he's awful. He is awful. He is a threat to our democracy. I don't want to talk. I don't. It's just, like, how can you even... I do. I think he's so, like I said, I tell people at Vox, it's like, you know, we came up, and I've said this before on the podcast, we're going to do nuance, and then the world gave us Donald Trump, which tests every single principle I stand for. But he's not a Republican, so I don't feel bad about that, because I do believe we need a Republican Party, and that the conservative movement is valuable. So I don't feel bad about that, because he's not a conservative. I do think that he is a real threat to... And I think he's already done a massive amount of damage, and pretending it's some false equivalency and she has to live up to this, you know, separate bar is ridiculous. This man is horrible and should not be president. I'm sorry. I've had a bourbon and several chocolate chip cookies, and I'm tired. I'm not feeling very nuanced after this debate.
It's just not good for our country to be in a place where we can't critique anyone, right? Like, I love Paul Ryan, and I will critique him all day. I mean, I think that we have to be able to ask questions, and I sort of resent any questioning of her being met with the false equivalency or he's the worst and you don't love our country. I mean, it's basically what, and look, the Republicans play this card all the time too in different circumstances. So this is not a partisan thing. It's just when you get really entrenched with one person, and I agree that he is uniquely unqualified. We know how I feel. I never want to be in the position of defending Donald Trump, but I also think that we have to be able to ask questions about Hillary Clinton. And, you know, when she's president, we have to be able to hold her accountable and state our opposition when we have it. And I don't like being in this kind of lecturing, finger wagging mode all the time of, like, he's the worst and we can't even take a second to examine our other option because he's so bad. And I'm not saying that you're finger wagging or lecturing. I feel that from social media, and I'm not even going to vote for him. You know what I mean? And I'm reacting to it.
So what were your, like, top couple moments tonight?
I thought the trade section was an important conversation for the country. I wish that a conservative perspective could have been represented there. I thought the most interesting moments were the moments where he expressed agreement with her. He expressed agreement.
He did that a lot.
He did. I mean, he expressed agreement with her about gun regulation. You know, after he's been walking around the country declaring that she's going to try to take everybody's guns away, he said, you know, I tend to think she's right about this. I tend to think she's right that nuclear proliferation is an enormous issue. I mean, there were several moments where he agreed, and I thought that was such an unusual tone for him. I thought it was wise of him and whomever encouraged him to do that. I thought it was also illustrative of how this campaign is not about a collision of ideas, really.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, I cannot believe how young you look. And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off. There's not much worse than a dry and itchy scalp. Also, when you get your hair colored and then it does not last as long as you and your stylist discussed, it could be that unfiltered, mineral-filled water is the culprit. Hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin, and about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered shower head. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. And they've even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit right. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
I thought that she had like I said, I thought she had a couple good moments. I liked when she said, I prepared. I liked when she said, I spent 11 hours. I was looking for zingers. I wanted zingers. I got a couple of them. I was frustrated with the way he just kept interrupting her and talking over her and talking over Lester Holt. But I did think that there was a few times that he, I even started to buy his bullshit about the Iraq war, where he was like, I was just being flippant on Howard Stern, and then if you go a few weeks later, I decided it was a terrible idea. Like, oh, what's wrong with me? But you know, overall, I think she did well. I don't think he came off as presidential, except for the fact that he was just on the stage overall, which concerns me, obviously. But as I've calming down, I feel like it went well for her.
I think it went well for her. I mean, I don't think it was an even performance in any respect. I think that if you buy into the logic that his bar was lower than hers, that he did not fail tremendously, to use one of his favorite adverbs. But I don't think that it was a successful night for him. I think she was good. I think that it probably is just another step in the slow evolution for those of us who are not enthusiastic about these options. But, I think she was very good. I think she did what she set out to do. I don't think she had any terrible moments at all.
No, I don't think so either. And I think she started off a little stiff and he started off good. But really, you want that the opposite. And then he kind of lost his way where she got stronger. And I think that's really the momentum you want in a debate.
Yeah, I think that's right. She had a good arc. I'll tell you what, watching both of them made me realize how hard it is to listen and to like stand there and have your facial expression on the television, because I don't think either of them maintain like a particularly flattering demeanor, and I don't fault them for that. Like, it's got to be just incredibly painful and difficult to sit there and listen to the other person and have your expressions analyzed. So I don't know that anyone could withstand that kind of scrutiny for 90 minutes without interruption.
And they didn't do that last time with the split screen the entire time, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way this was filmed was pretty intense.
Yeah, it was. Okay. Now that we officially have a yawn on tape.
That's thanks. What people come to us for. That's right. Pantsuit Politics, that kind of real gritty commentary.
Well, thanks for joining us. Next up, we're going to talk in the pearls about Beth's awesome retreat and trip and her 40 under 40 ceremony. And we will be right back. All right, in the heels, Beth also went on a couple-day retreat for her fabulous 40 under 40. I don't think the fabulous is part of it. I just added that, Beth. So tell us about your retreat.
Well, so it was actually two different things.
It was Leadership Kentucky. I'm sorry. Or Northern Kentucky.
So I had Leadership Northern Kentucky went on a retreat. This is a program sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. And it brings together people from our entire Northern Kentucky region. Northern Kentucky is kind of an interesting place because it's a mix of several different counties with common interest. It sits right across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio. And so there are a lot of issues common to this region. And yet every component of the region has a very kind of distinct culture too. So it's an interesting challenge when you think about moving the region forward, but it's a really cool and vibrant and wonderful place to live. So I'm excited to be part of this class. So we were going to Camp Joy, which is a summer camp type place that does all kinds of good in the world. They do camps for children with all sorts of medical problems so that they can just go and be with other kids like them and have fun for a week. They do a lot of diversity and inclusion programs for school, and they do corporate leadership training. So I got up at 5 o'clock to drive to Camp Joy to be there by 8 a.m. And I was there from 8 to 10:30, and then I got in my car and drove back to Cincinnati for the 40 under 40 honor lunch. And then I got in my car and drove back to Camp Joy and was there Friday afternoon. I changed clothes in my parking garage. Like, it was quite the adventure. And I'll have to say, like, I learned a lot about myself in these 2 days because I really struggled with all of this. I think what I learned is, like, I like being here with a couple thousand of our closest friends. I think because the setting is so intimate. But being in groups of people and especially feeling like I'm being personally seen in those groups, it is just, like, devastating for me. I mean, all really? I wanted to do was dig a hole and bury myself in it. I had to, like, choose a theme song and walk down this runway for the 40 under 40 lunch. And that was, like, a nightmare for me. And then
what did you choose? I picked
Masterpiece by Jesse J because I like the idea that you're always working towards something else, you know? So it's a good song. You should check it out. And then at Camp Joy, it was, like, all of this sort of, let's do a physical challenge and then discuss the parallels to leadership. There were some other things too. There was a really cool exercise where we sat in silence in a circle and the facilitator would make statements. And if you agreed, you would stand up from your chair, and how much you agreed would decide how far you walked toward the center of the circle.
Oh, and I like that. I want to do that.
Let's so that was really that. Fun. Yeah, that was good. Fun. The physical challenges, though, like, definitely not my cup of tea. I climbed to the top of a pole. I'm sore in places I didn't know I had. And this whole time, I have just learned that my father is in the hospital.
And
they suspected that he had a stroke. He did not. And let me just say to medical professionals, thank you for what you do. Understand that if you use a word like stroke, no one hears anything else. And you worry about that for days and days. So I was just, like, a mess during this couple of days. But I'm really excited about the rest of the program. I think it will get to be more things that naturally interest me and feel better to me. Like, we'll work on a project that will benefit the community. Previous classes have done like a community relay. One class made a makerspace, which I think is really cool. So there'll be lots of good stuff coming up with this program. And I think it's the right way for me to get involved in the community. It was just a very tough start for me. I don't know. Like I was listening to you talk about Vox Conversations and thinking, I feel like I would be much more comfortable in that environment than, like, in the woods climbing stuff or being blindfolded or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I still might struggle with sort of the group dynamics. Like, I'm just, that's not me.
I am a 100% true extrovert. It all sounds great. I will climb. I will talk. I will share. I will introduce myself. I will raise my hand. I don't really care. I'll do it all. It's fine. I love it. I love, it's like I was telling somebody about how much I love knocking on doors, and they're like, yeah, but that's an introvert's personal nightmare. And I was like, I mean, maybe if you just gave it a chance. They're like, no. It's so hard for me to, and I logically understand the that people zap your energy instead of giving you energy. Like, I can logically, like, think through that and get, like, what that's about. It's just not something I ever experienced. Now, I get zapped, like, tonight I really wanted to sell my children. Like, I get zapped by sort of people I'm close to if I've been around family members and, like, or close friends. Like, when we go on vacation and stuff, like, all my girlfriends think I'm, like, they make a lot of fun of me because I'm like, I'm Gabby, so much fun. And then around 10 o'clock, I'm like, everybody go away, and I don't want to see your face until tomorrow. So I get that a little bit, but just not with, when it's new people, no, all day long. Let's talk about stuff.
Oh, see, I want the old people. I love the old people. I can't get enough of the old people. But the new people, I like people one-on-one. Like, I almost think the knocking on doors I could do. It's when here's a group and we're supposed to, like, bond as a group and develop really quickly all these group dynamics.
Yeah.
It just really is a struggle for me. Like, I would love to, I mean, and there are incredible people in this group. I'd love to sit down with every one of them. I told them, like, and I used your line, we could sit down and I could say, like, tell me how you feel about your dad. Like, I can go deep one-on-one. It's just the sort of group thing that I find super overwhelming. I was actually, and I think a lot of it was that I was worried about my dad and I was exhausted from the sort of being on display of the awards thing. But it was really hard. I have to say, though, before we go, so Bryn and lots of other people, I don't even know who all to thank, organized like purchasing a slide for the presentation at this lunch that congratulated me from the Pantsuit Politics family. And it was one of the best moments of my life. And I am not exaggerating, and was just so humbled by it. So that, and my husband later telling Jane, my 5-year-old, that I won this award because I am kind and I respect people and work hard, and that makes people respect me. Like, those were two really good moments in a really tough week. So thank you, Bryn, and everyone.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us for another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We wanted to keep spending a little time showcasing different podcast players if you guys are looking for different ways to check it out. So if you haven't yet, there is another podcast app called Stitcher that I have several close friends who listen and really love it. So Stitcher is another great podcast player to check out if you're looking for options beyond what we've already talked about, like Overcast and Auto and, of course, iTunes. So check out a different podcast player and let's break this stranglehold iTunes has on us. And beyond that, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can subscribe to our email, get a t-shirt, or support our show at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com. And until Friday, keep it nuanced, y'all.